This is the Bible Book Club.
And we're so excited to be in one of my favorite books, the Book of Ruth.
Welcome to the club.
In chapter 1 of Ruth, the widow Naomi leaves the Moabite town where they're living with her daughter-in-law Ruth, and they arrive in Bethlehem, the house of bread, and they must find a way to survive. Ironically, the house of bread is in the harvest season, unlike Moab, where they just came, which was in a famine. Yep, and hint, hint, there is more than bread in the works. The bread of life is going to be one generation closer by the end of this book.
So this episode is called Ruth Steps Out and Boaz Steps Up. Chapter 2 is loaded with 5 scenes. All are different conversations between the 3 main characters, Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz. For all his importance, the author introduces him very nonchalantly in the first verse.
Chapter 2. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz.
While Ruth is clearly the main hero of this book, because it's named after her, there is another hero, Boaz. This one sentence introduction to chapter 2 is a plot prep because there are 2 things we need to know. Boaz is a man of standing, or in Hebrew, hail. Now, hail means more than the English translation of man of standing. Here we go again, like I said. It implies moral and ethical excellence, but can also indicate wealth, virtue, strength, courage, social standing, and even like warlike heroics kind of thing. It's a great word and one that will be very deliberately used 3 times in the book of Ruth. Here, it describes Boaz, who is wealthy, and we will soon see moral and ethical. It will be used in chapter 3 to describe Ruth, who is not wealthy, but is virtuous and courageous. And lastly, it will be used in chapter 4 in a blessing on both Boaz and Ruth. Note to us, hail must be self-developed and pursued in a partner. Whether it's a business partner or a life partner, you want them to have hail. Now, Boaz, we also learn, is from Naomi's clan, which will become more important in the next chapter. Here in chapter 2, Boaz is a stark contrast to Naomi. She is poor, he is rich. She is without connections, he has community clout. She is self-centered, and he is selfless. She is bitter, he is benevolent. She is without bread, and he is reaping a bountiful harvest. She is empty, he is full. The stage is set. Naomi is in need, and Boaz can provide. But someone must initiate. Scene 1, Ruth steps out in faith.
Verse 2, and Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters.
So note here that Ruth takes action to get food, and Naomi agrees, but with just a few words, but remains inactive. Why can't Naomi work too? She just spent at least a week on the road to Bethlehem, most likely walking on her own 2 feet. So she had to be in pretty good shape. Why isn't Naomi helping Ruth get food? Well, the commentary on this is interesting because it points possibly to Naomi's state of mind. Many believe that the return to Bethlehem did not restore Naomi's bitter spirits, but quite the opposite.
So she's depressed, and yes, she's probably also still grieving her husband
exactly.
And sons, and she's sad, and she has, I feel, a right to be.
Exactly. There's so much going on in the hearts and minds of both Ruth and Naomi, because remember, Ruth is a widow too.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get into what was Boaz thinking? I don't know. But here's, if we could imagine the scene, this is the way I picture it, not the way the Bible says, because the Bible doesn't say. Here's how I picture it. Naomi and Ruth arrive in Bethlehem and proceed to Naomi's old house. Naomi is bone tired from the exhausting journey because she is older. As they travel through the town, people greeted them, stared at them, may have whispered about them, and the attention was disheartening to her, maybe even humiliating. Naomi's old friends and acquaintances appeared so well to her, maybe prosperous even compared to herself. She was frustrated with the unfairness, and it fueled her bitterness. On top of that, she saw families everywhere, kids running around. Her friends had grandchildren. Now, this was a patriarchal community built on the promise of land passed down generationally. Childbearing was seen as a woman's primary purpose, and Naomi has no children. They are lost to her. She felt the pity of these women and even possibly the judgment, and it fueled her despair. The trip through town was a reminder of just how empty her life was. By the time she got to the house, she was so tired and defeated. And then she turned the corner and saw it. Her house, empty and aged. It probably looked like how she felt. She stepped inside and was assailed with vivid memories. Her joy at being a wife, the birth of her children, the funny things they did as toddlers, the pranks they played as little boys, laughter, the joy. It was just too much. Why had they ever left Bethlehem? Perhaps if they had stayed, her husband and sons would be alive today. Her despair probably swallowed her up and dragged her into a dark depression. She could not get away from grief and suffering. Did they have a rocking chair back then? Had she rocked her boys in one? Because that is where I picture Naomi, rocking in a corner, staring out a window, alone, empty, lost in despair, unable to even help herself. And when Ruth asked her if she should go out and get food, she just said, yeah, go. I don't care. I'm not even hungry. So Ruth stepped out in faith. Ruth sees Naomi and understands that she must be the provider. She made a pledge that Naomi would be hers and her God would be hers. It was a statement of faith. And now Ruth must put her faith into action. A challenge straight out of the book of James chapter 2, verse 14.
What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or a sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if not accompanied by action, is dead.
Ruth has faith, and Ruth is going to put it to action, because what she is about to do, again, we have to remember the times, took great courage. She is a female without any protection during the days of Judges when Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. And we know from season 7 that the lack of a king, the lack of laws and order led to child sacrifice, rape, and murder. The women, children, and marginalized were at greatest risk. And Ruth, we know, is very marginalized. They're calling her Ruth the Moabite, the enemy. Would Ruth have been safer if Naomi had gone with her? Absolutely. Naomi was an Israelite. She knew these people. But Naomi may be so depressed, she doesn't even feel hunger. And she's just sitting in that rocking chair. So Naomi doesn't offer to help. But Ruth doesn't even try to induce her. Ruth receives no instruction or coaching from Naomi on where to go or who to approach. She just quietly steps out on her own, probably lost in worry about her mother-in-law. Of course, God knows where she should go.
Verse 3 continued. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech.
God orchestrated every single step Ruth took from her front door to Boaz's field. We know this because God provided a glaring hint. If we combine the first and third verse together, we learn that
now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech.
Ruth didn't know that Naomi had relatives on her husband's side that might help, but as it turned out, she found them. Why hadn't Naomi told Ruth to go to a relative? Was she embarrassed that they had left Bethlehem and therefore were unfaithful and not worthy of the clan? Maybe she was even embarrassed that her sons had married Moabite women. She was ashamed of Ruth. Or maybe she was just so depressed that she was shut down, not thinking. Ruth's humility and willingness to act pays off, because as it turned out, she just happens by chance to end up in Boaz's field. This is not luck, but an act of God's chesed. God is moving behind the scenes to bless Ruth and restore Naomi, the husbandless, childless widow. And Ruth's act of chesed to Naomi is then being augmented by God's act of chesed to Ruth. Note, God is always working behind the scenes. The problem is that we often miss it and therefore fail to give him the praise for it. In your life story, can you think of a time when God was working behind the scenes, orchestrating chesed for you? All right, next, Boaz acts, and God continues to orchestrate. In scene 2, Boaz sees Ruth.
Verse 4. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. Lord be with you. The Lord bless you, they answered. Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, who does that young woman belong to?
God's providence builds with each intro to each scene. We went from, as it turned out, Ruth went to Boaz's field, to just then, Boaz arrived. God made it all very convenient. Then Boaz sees Ruth, and he really saw her. He didn't just notice her. He took an interest in her. Boaz immediately asked, who does she belong to? So was Boaz already interested in Ruth? Because you know how that goes down anywhere else. Oh, who's that guy over there? Some commentators do think this question implies an attraction on his part because there is more inference to come. But this question could just mean that Boaz was the type of employer who knew and cared for all who either worked or gleaned on his property. Again, we don't know. What did he see, though, when he looked? They were so different. They say opposites attract. Perhaps that was the intrigue. He was prosperous. She was impoverished. He was an Israelite. She was a Moabite. He was older. She was younger. He was respected by the community. She was marginalized. Boaz was a local catch. Ruth, not so much. Then the overseer responds, and he gives a good report.
In verse 6, the overseer replied, she is the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvester. She came into the field and has remained here from morning until now, except for a short rest in the shelter.
Okay, I love this overseer because he's A, in the know, and B, he gives a really good report. He provides Boaz with what he needs to hear. So he's definitely a well-trained manager. The overseer's report is short and to the point. Ruth asked graciously to glean in the fields, implying she has manners, and she worked hard, barely stopping to rest. Now, gleaning was an Israelite law from the books of Leviticus and Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy 24, Moses explained why.
Deuteronomy 24, verse 19. When you are harvesting in your field and you overlook a sheaf, do not go back to get it. Leave it for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat the olives from your trees, do not go over the branches a second time. Leave what remains for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow. When you harvest the grapes in your vineyard, do not go over the vines again. Leave what remains for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt. That is why I command you to do this.
So gleaning was a way for the poor and the marginalized to provide food for themselves, especially those people who had limited access to land and ownership in the promised land, because remember, it's passed down generationally, such as foreigners like Ruth, orphans, and widows like Naomi. Why were the Israelites to allow this? Because they were once slaves without access to land in Egypt, and God wants them to have compassion for those who are in the situation that they once were in. However, the Israelites didn't always obey the laws during this dark time period of Judges. And because of that, gleaning for women was dangerous, especially if you were an unprotected foreign female. Every man in the field knew that Ruth had no male to physically defend her. Ruth was in danger of being harassed and potentially assaulted. But because of the unseen hand of God, this was not going to happen. As it turned out, Ruth just happened to be on Boaz's land. And just then, Boaz happened to arrive. And Boaz wasn't just any man. He was a stark contrast to the men of Judges. So far, he's been a stark contrast to Naomi, a stark contrast to Ruth, and he is a really strong contrast to the men of Judges. Boaz was a strong leader with overseers and workmen who respected him. He was a sharp contrast to the increasingly disorderly leadership of Jephthah and Samson, our last two judges in the book of Judges. Boaz was a man of Hagiel, and even though he was busy, he just happened to notice the new woman gleaning in his field. And God clearly had the whole plan mapped out, because in scene 3, Boaz steps up as provider and protector.
Verse 8. So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you're thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars that the men have filled."
Boaz speaks to Ruth with intentional instructions. First, she is to stay close or cling to the women who work for him. Now note, he's not saying the other women who are gleaning. He's saying the women who work for him, which gave her closer access to the barley in this case. The Hebrew word used is dabak, also used in Genesis 2:24, where the word references how a man should cling to his wife. Then he tells her to work and watch his field. Now this starts getting a little innuendo here. The Hebrew word used is enek, or let your eyes be on my field only, like Potiphar's wife cast her eyes on Joseph only. Boaz wants her to cast her eyes on his field. Then he tells her of his protection. He will not let any man lay a hand on her. The Hebrew word naga implies that he will not let any man molest her. This was a sexual protection. Lastly, he instructs her that when she thirsts, she is to drink the water drawn from his vessels. Now, this was highly unusual. Normally, foreigners drew water for the Israelites. And if foreigners weren't around, women drew water for men, which is exactly, if you remember in Genesis, how Isaac got a wife. His servant prayed that the woman who came to the well would be the one for Isaac. And sure enough, Rebecca came and offered to draw water for him. Now, is Boaz unintentionally or intentionally implying something to Ruth? She probably didn't even notice, being a foreigner and Hebrew not being her native tongue. But in my mind, these actions kind of qualify as him making the first move. And we will see in chapter 3 that Ruth understands Hebrew well enough to use a few of his own words and kick the matrimonial overtones up a notch. God orchestrated and Boaz acted to provide food and protect Ruth and Naomi. He says, "Don't go in another field. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you." In other words, come to my field every day for your safety. Boaz knows that other men will hear his actions to provide food for Ruth and Naomi. Boaz also knows that as a relation of Naomi's, the men will understand that these women have his protection. His workers honor his favor toward her. Boaz's action is just the beginning of his love and loyalty, or chesed, to these women. All right, next. Ruth is totally overwhelmed and responds to Boaz's chesed with deep humility and gratitude.
Verse 10. At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge."
Ruth is so humble. She bows down in a flood of relief or awe or disbelief. Who knows what she was feeling. In my mind, she fell to the ground in relief because think about what she has been through. She is under so much stress. She carries the burden of feeding them without any job prospects or connections. She's totally at the mercy of others to allow her to glean. And she's not just a foreigner. She is a Moabite, an enemy of Israel. Why would anyone let her glean in their field? She had to be thinking that as she's like walking down the road, like, okay, how do I go about this? It's possible that people had even been unkind to her as she went from field to field. We just don't know. On top of all that, she has to work fast and get home before she gets raped. If I were Ruth, Boaz's words would have made me weep into a heap. Now, Boaz, let's think about him. He has done some homework, again, which kind of implies he's interested. He has made it his business to know this woman. He sees her character. He knows of the chesed, the kindness and loyalty she has shown to her mother-in-law, Naomi. Ruth, in his mind, has value. She is not just a widow. She's not just a Moabite or a poor person. She's loyal to Naomi and her God. She is a survivor and has not allowed her grief to paralyze her. She is brave like Abraham to journey to a foreign place. She has demonstrated that she is a woman of Hayel. She is constant in her devotion and worthy of his attention. And Boaz asks God to bless her for it. Boaz returns Ruth's chesed to Naomi with chesed of his own for Ruth. Then Boaz acknowledges Ruth's conversion in verse 12 when he said,
"May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge."
Boaz is not just a provider and protector. He is an encourager. He sees her as a believer when everybody else is scoffing at her. He says she has taken refuge under God's wings. Can you imagine how that made her feel? That Boaz, a man of such high importance, would take note of her faith and actually believe in her, a Moabite. Well, Ruth ends the conversation with
verse 13, "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants."
The term "find favor" is a favorite of mine. We could do an entire episode on the lessons from people who find favor. It seems to me that when people ask God for favor, God uses them favorably. Ruth, Moses, Hannah, Esther all asked for favor and all were used in mighty ways by God. Now, Ruth talked about it three times in this chapter. In verse 2, she seeks favor. It said,
"Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor."
In verse 10, she finds favor.
She asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?"
And in verse 13, she asks for favor to continue.
"May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said.
When was the last time you asked God for favor? Because in Luke 2:52, it says this,
"And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man."
To find favor with God and man is a goal to pray for. It's something my kids know. I pray for them all the time, that they would find favor with God and man. Well, Boaz carries his chesed into the next scene and into a new conversation that takes place over a meal. Shall we call it a date? Scene 4. Boaz and Ruth break bread in Bethlehem, the house of bread.
Verse 14, "At mealtime, Boaz said to her, 'Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar.' When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some of the roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, 'Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up and don't rebuke her.'"
Definitely a date. I'm sorry. And the grain and the wheat he's asking for them to leave behind is like, you know, flowers maybe. I don't know. Boaz offers her bread and wine. Are we communioning here? They are in Bethlehem, known as the house of bread. They are courting and warming up to each other. They are figuratively preheating the bread oven. And when their relationship gets hot, they're going to conceive, and Ruth is going to bake the seed that leads to the bread of life, Jesus Christ. And then We all get communion. Bread and wine for everyone. I'm sorry, but the analogy is too much. God must chuckle over his own creativity.
I'm over here chuckling over your creativity for sure.
I'm sorry. It's too obvious. He asked her, he could have asked her for charcuterie or something. Oh no, he asked her to come over and have bread and wine. Too much. It's all there. I didn't make this up. Boaz's generosity expresses his growing affection. In fact, one commentator said that his extravagance was almost scandalous. Boaz bestows favor and honor and withholds no good thing, just like the Lord who withholds no good thing from us. Then Boaz boldly goes public that Ruth is special. He basically tells his workers to hand her the wheat. And you know that must have created some talk. The boss is interested in a girl. And they went home and told their wives and they talked about it all through dinner. I'm just saying. Naomi responds to Boaz Hesed, and in scene 5, Hesed grows hope.
Verse 17. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it mounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness, Hesed, to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers."
Okay. Remember, the title of episode 1 was Sweet Naomi's Bitter Return, and we talked about how she had no hope. And it was actually the topic of our Advent extra. The bonus episode for that is hope. Naomi responds with hope here. So we see she had no hope, and now it's starting to light a fire. She responds with hope to the good news of Boaz's Hesed. Naomi has returned to Bethlehem, the house of bread, without hope. She is old, she is husbandless, she is without sons to provide for her, but this is not the end of her story, and she finally sees it. She has a little bit of hope here. God had provided through Ruth, her faithful and humble daughter-in-law, and now Boaz, an honorable kinsman redeemer. And God is not done orchestrating. God has a plan to give more. Little did Naomi know that silently behind the scenes, she was part of God's plan of hope for all the world. God's Hesed, his kindness and loyalty, exceeds all others.
Verse 21, then Ruth the Moabite said, "He even said to me, stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain." Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvest were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law.
Ruth worked in Boaz's fields until both the barley and wheat harvests were finished, which could have been anywhere from 7 weeks to 3 months. So like in April, May, and June, both those harvests take place. Now, perhaps Ruth saw Boaz every day because, you know, in my mind, they've kind of gone from we're just talking to we're dating. And during that time, I think Naomi's hope just continued to grow. And I think her bitterness began to fade, because in the next episode, we're going to find that Naomi's mind is coming back, and she's thinking, and she's dreaming, and she's hoping, and she is matchmaking. And if you guessed, you might have guessed, our Advent extra, our Advent edition or bonus for episode 1 was about hope. And the second one is going to be about stepping out in faith.
What's a club without friends? If you're enjoying the Bible Book Club, why don't you share it? And then you can say,
Welcome to the club.
New episodes drop every Monday, and get all episodes now on Amazon Music. As always, head over to susanmee.com/Bible Book Club for show notes from today's episode. Bible Book Club is hosted by Susan Merrill and Heather Rubio, edited by Buck Buchanan, produced by Haley Mawat.